Cohen. In recent years, the popularity of zip lines has risen significantly, but so has awareness of accidents and injuries they have caused. Illinois Public Radio's Peter Gray reports from the Illinois State Fair on what the state's Labor Department is doing to make sure zip line riders are safe there and throughout Illinois.
Come on, you guys want to ride? You guys riding?
Thrill seekers at the Illinois State Fair this year have a new carnival ride competing for their dollars. Brenda Seaman of Springfield and her grandson Julian step out of nylon webbing harnesses. It was their first tandem zip line ride.
I loved it. It was great. It was fun. It was a double dog dare. We did it.
It was fun, but scary. I feel like I was going to die.
Zip lining can be a dangerous thrill. All riders of Zach Kramer's mobile zip line must sign a liability waiver before getting on the ride, and the owner-operator says the state requires him to carry $1 million in liability insurance coverage.
Finding insurance carriers for it was a little difficult just because it is new. I think it's just kind of a way that everybody's trying to protect themselves until this becomes more popular.
Kramer says he wasn't sure what to expect, bringing his brand new zip line from his home state of Utah, where it was manufactured. His application to set up at the Illinois State Fair, after all, was what put state regulators with the Department of Labor in high gear.
These zip lines are really new here, like they are everywhere, so they put together some emergency rules.
And those emergency rules, by law, expire towards the end of October.
Ryan Colton is manager of the state's Carnival and Amusement Ride Safety Division. He says when the state hired him in April, he saw immediately that it would need new rules on the books to address a recent surge in construction of commercial zip lines across the country, some of which have generated some rather unpleasant headlines.
Georgia has had an accident involving a young woman who fell into a stream and ended up getting, a flesh-eating virus. And that's exactly why the department has tried to be proactive.
The state board overseeing carnival safety ruled that zip lines should be regulated and licensed, just like mechanical amusement rides such as Ferris wheels or tilt-a-whirls.
Everything has to be original manufactured equipment from the manufacturer of my zip line. Daily, weekly, monthly, and annual inspections.
Back at the state fair, Zach Kramer's team prepares for another busy day. Jason Roth pulls a thick three-ring binder and two pulley carts from a locked bin and climbs the tower's metal stairs to start his morning inspection routine.
Let me just go through this checklist here that, will verify that the rope is in good shape, verify that the air pressure and the hydraulic fluid is good in the braking system, make sure that the carts are connected properly, and then all of the hardware is in good condition.
When drafting new regulations, the state defers to safety manuals provided by the manufacturer of the ride. But regulators were uneasy when they read that ride operators were being allowed to anchor their zip lines to the bumper of heavy vehicles. Fortunately, Zach Kramer's manufacturer was a step ahead. It had just finished building a water counterweight system, which is an 850-gallon plastic tank like a heavy-duty swimming pool enclosed in a steel frame to anchor the taut metal lines to 7,000 pounds of water.
The tank itself, it had to go through a substantial testing and documentation to be able to be functional, so it is approved and safe. But yeah, we're the first ones out here with it, with this piece of equipment, to be able to operate in Illinois.
Even as this year's carnival season zips by, the hastily imposed rules governing these popular new attractions are still being revised. When they become a permanent part of state law, Ryan Colton assures zipline operators they won't be regulated any more or any less than other carnival rides.
We're not trying to hinder the enterprise in any way. We just want to make sure that if the public of Illinois goes on the ride, that they can be assured that there's been some safety design constraints put into it.
For his part, Zach Kramer of Utah seems to be having fun catching kids who reach the end of his zip line and lowering them safely to the ground. He shrugs when asked about internet videos documenting injury at other zip operations.
I do realize that, with anything, accidents can happen, and if people look hard enough, they can find something wrong, on YouTube or whatever, but I'm just a normal guy, married, and I got three kids, and I want to sleep good at night, and I want to make sure everybody's safe and that I feel comfortable with my job. So.
From the Illinois State Fair in Springfield, I'm Peter Gray.
The Chicago Cubs have fired Vice President of Player Personnel Oneri Flyda. President of Baseball Operations Theo Epstein said today that more front office changes were imminent for the 45-70 Cubs. With a record like that, it's safe to say the Cubs will not compete for a playoff spot this year. But their odds have improved for future seasons, if for no other reason than that beginning this year, there are more wild card teams, one in each league. More wild card teams in baseball, the more the merrier, says commentator Frank DeFord. He says it makes the playoffs that much more exciting.
Bud Selig, the commissioner of baseball, has convinced his owners and the players to add an extra wild card team to the playoffs, so now five teams per league will qualify. Not only is this terrific for the fans, but Selig also wisely managed to make it so that the wild card teams engage in a one-game showdown for the privilege of being the team that joins the three division winners in the battle for the league championship. I have just the old-fashioned word for this newfangled development: nifty. But as we might expect, the diamond fundamentalists have thrown a conniption fit. It's simply not fair, not the American way, to play 162 games and then have your fate decided by one lousy itty-bitty game. Well, here's the answer. While regular seasons in any sport are, by virtue of their great length, pretty fair, playoffs are not meant to be fair. They're meant to be popular. These are games they're playing, my friends, not mathematical equations they're proving. If all playoffs did was validate the winner of the regular season, then what would be the point? For my money, it would be even better if there were even more playoff teams and more playoffs that were just one game, winner take all. It's more exciting. And look, the regular season champion is rarely going to win anyway. Just look at this past year. The Cardinals won the World Series even though they didn't qualify for the wild card till the last day of the season. But then in this century, in two-thirds of the years, the World Series has included also-rans from the sanctified regular season. Next, the Giants won the Super Bowl, even though they'd finished the regular season by a mere one game over 500. Then the Kings took the Stanley Cup as the eighth and worst seed in the conference. Okay, the Heat were best in the NBA regular season and did repeat as playoff champions. But then basketball is always the most predictable playoff sport because it involves the fewest variables. A handful of the same players playing each other over and over on standardized courts, customized, indoors with no weather issues. The wonderful thing about team sport is that it is so dicey, that games are not decided by all those nerds who worship at the altar of statistics. Look right now, for instance, at the Baltimore Orioles, who are prominently in the expanded American League wildcard race. They can't pitch, hit, or pick up the ball. They are not the beautiful orange and black bird of their name, but rather a version of the yellow and black bumblebee, which in common myth, aerodynamically isn't supposed to be able to fly, but does. So the Baltimore Bumblebees still win more games, even though they're outscored overall. You know what? So did the New York Giants last year actually score fewer points than their opponents in the regular season. But then they got hot and won the Super Bowl. Hooray for wild cards and one-game showdowns and second chances. Playoffs are nifty.
The comments of Frank DeFord. He comes to us from member station WSHU in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Voter ID laws have cropped up in many states as the 2012 election approaches. Do they suppress votes or prevent fraud? On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Nate Persily, a professor of law and political science at Columbia University, and with State Representative Daryl Metcalf, who sponsored Pennsylvania's voter ID law. It went into effect this year, but is under legal challenge. Join us
this afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
And speaking of Pennsylvania's voter ID law, a Pennsylvania judge is not stopping that voter identification law from going into effect. Commonwealth Court Judge Robert Simpson today refused to grant an injunction that would have halted the law requiring each voter to show a valid photo ID. Opponents are expected to file a prompt appeal to the state Supreme Court as the November 6th presidential election looms. The law, of course, as you just heard, is the subject of a furious debate over voting rights. And again, we'll have more details on Fresh Air at 1 o'clock.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 15th of August, 2012. Birthday of the Swedish novelist Stieg Larsson, born in Skelleftehamn, Sweden, 1954, took up fiction writing as a way to make some extra money. Started in 2001, He had written two novels, started on a third when he approached an editor. He was planning 10 detective thrillers called the Millennium Series, but he died of a heart attack the following year. His three novels published posthumously. The first, in Swedish, is called Men Who Hate Women, better known as The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. It's the birthday of Mary Jo Salter, Grand Rapids, Michigan, 1954, went off to Harvard, took a poetry class from Elizabeth Bishop. She's published several poetry collections. Once asked what she would be if she weren't a poet, she said, "I'm a writer because I'm not a composer. That's what I'd really love to be, a composer of long, complex symphonies and operas, to produce the wordless power of music to move people in that way. I'm stuck with being better at words." It's the birthday of the essayist Thomas De Quincey, Manchester, England, 1785. He was fluent in Greek as a young man, moved to the Lake District, became a friend of Wordsworth and Coleridge, and then in 1813 he became addicted to opium. Chronically in debt, had to take a job writing articles for magazines, but he's best remembered for his book Confessions of an English Opium Eater. It was on this date, 1935, the humorist Will Rogers and his friend and pilot Wiley Post died in a plane crash, flying from Fairbanks, Alaska to Point Barrow. Post was flying a plane that he had cobbled together from parts of two different planes. Lockheed, the plane manufacturer, had warned him that the plane could be unsafe. It was hard to control. The nose tended to dip down. And when Post took off from a lagoon, the engine stalled when they were just 50 feet in the air. The plane's nose dropped, and both men died instantly. It was on this date, 1843, the Tivoli Gardens opened in Copenhagen, the second oldest amusement park in the world. The oldest is in Klampenborg, near Copenhagen. Designed as a pleasure garden with flowers, cafes, theaters, and bandstands, in 1943, Nazi sympathizers burned most of the buildings to the ground, and it had to be rebuilt. A few years ago, Tivoli Gardens became the first amusement park to operate entirely on wind-generated power. And it's the birthday of Denise Chavez, born in Las Cruces, New Mexico, 1948. Her first novel was Face of an Angel, came out in 1994. The protagonist is a waitress, and Chavez herself had spent more than